Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow, to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.
Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genAI to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway. How are you, Kara?
Good. You once again have triumphed. I cannot believe it.
Not
the Bill Maher thing. Amazon's expanding its telehealth program, Amazon Care, to all of its U.S. employees and other companies. We've both been talking about this, but this was the idea that Amazon, as it's done with its logistics, and AWS is starting to do this.
You mean in 2018, when I predicted a DLD, Amazon would be the biggest healthcare company in the world, and
yes.
The CTO of Amazon then took to the stage and just called me a comedian and then refused to answer any questions about Amazon's entry into healthcare.
And then you're not heard about that, are you?
Look, what was that movie with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise where we got to see them kiss, Diary of a Vampire? Was
I
that
guess.
It?
No,
the
okay,
Anne Rice
sure.
novel?
Sure, yeah.
Sure?
Okay. Yeah, okay, fine.
Both hugely underrated actors because they're both so hot. Anyways, he can't survive on rats. And finally, he has to go after humans.
Yeah.
And Amazon, if you look at the retail ecosystem.
I can't believe you're making this metaphor, but keep going.
It works.
Handsome gay vampires.
When it works, it works. And then a bridge to Amazon and healthcare.
Yes. All right. Let's block this metaphor. But
if you look at the retail ecosystem, Walmart's done okay. Lululemon's done okay. There's some well-publicized examples of coming. And basically, everyone has been sucked dry. Amazon has added more market capitalization than I think all of European retail is worth since the pandemic. And they, bottom line is, they need a new carcass. And there just is no carcass as fat and ready as healthcare. And they have been lining up their troops at the border. It's just so obvious that Halo, their food, their acquisition of PillPack, their investment in voice. And it's both really exciting because this could provide a level of primary healthcare access to tens, if not hundreds of millions of Americans. But also, and this is why Amazon needs to be broken up, it is going to, you're going to see everyone from Hims and Hers, which we talked about this week, to Teladoc, to the healthcare insurance industry and hospital provider. You're going to see everyone start to leak market capitalization to Amazon.
Yeah, on a lot of things. And this is interesting. They're using Amazon Care, which is it's interesting because, Slack, started as a communication system within a game company and became Slack. And this is something Amazon was using its AWS system internally and then made it logistics. You can also see them doing logistics that they do at factories and white selling, whatever it's called. White labeling them. A lot of the things it's doing, this is something it's doing with its own employees, which number in the million now.
But the ultimate jujitsu move that we'll be writing case studies about for 20 years in business schools is that go line item by line item and take Amazon's biggest expenses. Their biggest expenses as an online or as an e-commerce player was fulfillment. They said, I know, let's turn our biggest expense fulfillment into a profit center and start Amazon fulfillment. What is probably their third or fourth biggest expense? Healthcare for their workers. So they said, how can we innovate around our own healthcare, test it, and then we're going to turn it into a profit center? No company has been able to take their expense line and pivot every major expense into an enormous business that drives shareholder value.
Yeah, it really is interesting. Remarkable. But let me just tell you, telehealth is a dicey proposition, of course. You know, delivering pharmacy pills is one thing, which is sort of in their wheelhouse. But you know, they are dealing with their program. But moving in doctors and stuff, like, let me read you. This was from Dr. Jeffrey Swisher about our discussion with him. I have to read it. He's just driving me crazy with the text, Scott. I got to deal with it. Let me just read the text that I got and I ignored completely the other night. I was literally screaming at your guest on Pivot today. He was so far in over his head, he has no idea. This isn't medicine. It is millennial Band-Aid. So many thoughts. First off, what self-respecting physician spends 15 minutes on video and gets compensated a fraction of some $20 to $30. What about misdiagnosis, malpractice, state's law, ethics? Shilling Viagra and skincare is one thing, but diagnosing and treating UTIs? My head is exploding. What about actual sick people with diabetes, COPD, CAD? They don't exist in Teletubby medicine land. And then I sent him a winky face and he wrote, I'm telling you, I'm screaming at him. He got super animated talking about his fucking SPAC, but has no clue about medicine. Holy shit. This medical advisor was a chief doctor at Walgreens. That is the same company that is that greenlit Theranos. So
here's the thing. What that tells me.
Okay. Swisher is pissed.
More than any insight into medicine, it's entirely clear to me that neither of you was adopted, that you are in fact related by blood.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
When I hear that. He's good. D-Swish coming in.
J-Swish. D-Swish is J-Swish. The lawyer you don't want to meet, but go ahead.
Actually, I think I want to meet him. So look, but here's the thing. And I love Dr. Swisher. Jeff is like kind of my new older brother who tells me when I'm wrong about three times.
Yeah, he yells at you a lot on the Twitter.
I need that.
Yeah. Anyways, right, okay.
Here's the thing. If you want to get a total gripe fest, total bitch fest, get a bunch of doctors, invite a bunch of doctors over for dinner.
Yes.
They're anchoring off the high point when doctors 30 years ago had the biggest house in the neighborhood, the nicest car, and played golf on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And if you go into, I think of medicine as retail, and the shittiest retail in America is gas stations. The second shittiest retail, I think Tesla's more a story of just getting out of gas stations and electrifying the world. But anyways, the second worst retail is a doctor's office. I went to my urologist for my monthly like complaint around how much I'm peeing. And by the way, his internship and residency in Grenada really paid off. He's like, well, dude, you're 56. That's his medical diagnosis every time I complain about how much I'm peeing.
We moved from gay vampires to your prostate, but go ahead.
Hello.
We're going to get to the big story in a minute. Okay.
All right.
So land your plane here. Go ahead.
My point is, there's a kernel of truth in everything that Dr. Swisher is saying.
Yeah.
You know what? Doctors have stuck out their chin in the medical industrial complex. Think about how shitty visits to the doctor's office are.
They are.
If I went into Best Buy and asked to get information on a flat screen TV, they wouldn't hand me paperwork and say, fill this out for the 15th time.
Yeah.
And not even stand up, not even make eye contact.
There is HIPAA.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because probably the biggest innovation here, or the biggest catalyst for the explosion in telehealth, is the pandemic bringing down a lot of regulations, which quite frankly were put up to entrench the incumbents. I think Dr. Swisher needs to get on board here.
He needs to join Amazon Care.
The chief medical officer for, something.
Amazon Care. Yeah. Then he would love it. He wanted to be in a tech company. All his friends went to Microsoft after Stanford. They're all on islands. I think he's a little bit jealous.
Maybe his sister could get him a job. Anyways,
thank you.
I'm an investor in this company called 98.6, and we find a third of the people who reach out to us for primary health care.
What does that do? What does 98.6 do?
So 98.6.
I understand what it is. But
primary care, remote primary care sold in through the enterprise. So if you're Walmart, who's a client, you spend $10 per month, I think it is, per employee, and they can access primary health care over their phone. It's a series of AI-driven questions that then get you to the right specialist.
Amazon Care is going to come and bat and smack you around.
Or acquire us, and the dog finally gets his Gulfstream. Hello. Because you know what, Kara?
What?
I'm an interesting guy, but with a Gulfstream, I'd be fucking fascinating.
I would love you if that was the case. I would really like you about 100% more.
I'd be fascinating at 0.9.
You'd move from 33% of my mind share to maybe 60.
There you go. At 0.9 Mach, the dog is sexy.
Yeah.
Anyways, what were we talking about?
Vampire. The doctor's pushing at us for being nice to the thing.
But what we find is on 98.6 is that a third of the people that make inquiries about whatever it is, a rash or UTI or whatever it is, they're doing it while they're in a meeting. Think about how what a pain it is, like the emotional barriers to deciding, okay, I'm actually going to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And being able to just flip open your phone and say, this is bothering me. Should I be worried? And then they can literally, they can prescribe you something and it can be there within an hour or 2 hours.
Yeah. So let us say to doctors, I'm going to close this out with the gay vampires, et cetera, is some of this is going to be complex. Yeah, be a vampire. That'll solve it all. Some of this is going to be complex with the other things, but a lot of stuff that you go to the doctor for is irritating and there's a big business opportunity there. And eventually they will get it better than doctors do because doctors, I'm sorry to say, are very difficult to use as a product. Jeff, you're a product that's difficult to use. Not you, because you dispense drugs when people are in surgery.
His doctors went up. Say more.
He's an anesthesiologist. You can't do that telehealth. The complex stuff is complex and should be. What,
though? That's about a third of expenditures. About two thirds of expenditures
are common. Yeah.
Can be delivered remotely.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Jeff, we will have you on at some point. You can yell at us.
I'm literally
keep tweeting,
scared.
Keep texting.
I'm scared to check my DMs after I get off this.
Does he DM you? I'll have to speak
seriously.
To him. All right, really quickly.
Only gay vampires will be more offended than Dr. Swisher from
God,
this.
God, he's going to don't DM Scott Jeff. Jeez. Anyway, let me just last thing in this banter part, by the way, and it's completely unrelated. Facebook will start sharing an annual report detailing the company's impact on human rights as part of an effort to address criticism of the platform. Shall we subscribe to that?
Wait, what was this?
Facebook will start sharing an annual report detailing the company's impact on human rights in part of an effort to address criticism on the platform.
Well, that's going to be a page turner.
Okay.
You know what I'd like to do? Can they have that? I'd like to get that on VHS so I can rent it, take it home, and erase it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I thought they were doing it. Okay. Sure. Whatever. Seems a little cow barn meat barn door. I don't know.
Let me summarize it. We're really awful for the world, but we need to do better, and we're proud of the progress we've made.
Yeah.
Let me summarize what it'll say right now.
It's true.
By the way, did you hear I'm engaged?
No. You're being mean now.
Sorry. I can't.
You're being mean now.
That's totally inappropriate.
Later, I do want to talk about a movie I saw this weekend, Promising Young Woman. I love it. It's fantastic.
What was it called?
Young Woman. It got an Academy Award nomination. It's fans. Have you seen it? Obviously you haven't.
Which means I'm a misogynist if I haven't seen it.
No, it's great. Listen, watch it and we need to discuss it because there's a lot going on there.
Wasn't the director nominated for Best Director?
Yes, she is. And she also played Camilla Barker Bowles in The Crown. She's amazing, this woman. And she was also the showrunner for Killing Eve. She's really quite
Eve is one of my favorites.
This movie I want to see Scott Galloway's reaction to this movie. That's what I was thinking the whole time. It is a mind blower,
really?
I have to say. Yes, it deserves the Academy Award 100%.
All right. A little edible and a little promising young woman.
You're going to be freaked out, Scott Galloway. I'm just going to say.
The dog lives his life
up front,
Kara.
This is going to freak you out. I cannot speak to you about it until you see it. And then
really?
You will see it. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking. I'm only remembering because there's a scene where she's dressed up as a naughty nurse. But you're not going to like that scene.
I've never been
into it. You're going to like it, but then you're not going to like it.
I've never been into cosplay. And I've tried everything, Kara.
Just watch it.
I've tried everything. Are we talking about my prostate again?
I wish I was watching it with you. Is what I was watching. Yes, I am again. We're going to move along to the big story.
Let's go on a movie date.
Let's go to Alamo Draft House. All right. Well, it's bankrupt.
But it's still operating.
Yes, that's true. Okay, we will do that now, you know, once we're all vaccinated and ready to go. All right, Facebook is starting a Substack. This is a big story. Facebook is starting a Substack competitor, speaking of human rights. The platform will include tools for journalists to build actual websites in addition to newsletters. Facebook plans to start with a small group of writers and plans to pay them to help get it off the ground. Meanwhile, there's trouble in paradise at Substack. Some writers are accusing the newsletter platform of allowing anti-trans writing to flourish with their tools and using their Substack Pro fund to fuel these writers. It's a little more complex than that because it's also they're not being transparent of who they're paying. So it's not clear who's actually making money. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to sort of sell all the others on you're going to make money here. But some of them they're paying on top of it. So you don't know where the economics seem confused. They are really an edit operation when in fact they were just saying they were platform. Anyway, it's quite confusing.
Are people talking are very about up and Facebook arms. Or Substack?
Substack. But yeah. Here's Facebook coming in with a competitor. Same thing with Twitter. And Facebook's going to possibly not charge anything, pulling a Microsoft, Explorer move here on Netscape, essentially. So what do we think about this? Will the writers use a Facebook Substack like a tool? Is there just another Facebook attempt to mimic popular new platforms like TikTok? What do you think about this situation?
Well, it's really interesting, whether it's Coursera and Google coming in with certificates, whether it's Clubhouse and Twitter coming in with, is it called Spaces?
Spaces on Twitter. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, or now it's Facebook coming after Substack. Look, anything.
And Twitter with review, but go ahead.
But anything I think that gives journalists more opportunities to own their audience and extract higher rents from the platforms that have starched most of the margin out of journalism, I think is a good thing. But there's just no getting around it. I've really benefited from my partnership with Facebook, said no one ever. Said no one ever. So just proceed with caution because Facebook.
Yeah, remember Zynga?
Facebook will say, we're creating pages for brands so you can own your audience. That was literally what they said. Oh, Nike, you need to have a bigger page. Yeah, so if you pay to advertise, you can have a bigger page. And then just kidding, we own those people and you don't have access to them unless you advertise. Mm-hmm. So I would just say proceed with caution because. I mean, and it's an old saying, and I've said it a long time, Facebook partners with journalists and vendors and media companies like a virus partners with a host. They'll keep you alive long enough such that they survive. But
Back to vampires.
Eventually, it ends poorly for one of the parties, and it's not Facebook. So,
all right, but talk about this idea of why, like, Facebook and Twitter, and, of course, Substack, and we can talk about the issues. I think a lot of people arguing about this issue, and by the way, it would be nice. Annalee Newitz wrote a good piece beyond just the issue of funding people who are anti-trans necessarily it doesn't stay a neutral platform for one. Two, it's not transparent of who they're funding, right? And it's not transparent of who's, I think it's the transparency around the business model is also really problematic in that you don't know who's making money. So how do you look at this shaking out, the expansion of these newsletters and the future of media, because I think it's a lot more complex than yelling. The people who are being attacked are like free speech. And in fact, the CEO stupidly tweeted defund the thought police. He's trying to like yell free speech in a crowded Twitter theater where everybody can go crazy. But talk about this expansion of the newsletters and the future of media, because I think that's really and the business model behind it. I think that's what's really. Doing it, but they've managed to anger a lot of people and have sort of looking like they're abrogating their responsibility in addressing anti-trans concerns.
So look, it's a collision of a lot of big trends around digitization, both good and bad. And the first is that the most talented people get to leapfrog the platforms. It's dispersion of value. And that is, when I read Maureen Dowd, I think she has just such facility or aplomb with English language. Even if I don't agree with her views, I just love reading her writing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she, if she chooses, can skip this platform, the brand, she's the brand. And the fact that she can own her own audience, which quite frankly is not only presents economic upside, but when you talk about cancel culture, essentially it's you're not being canceled. It's the platform that comes under fire and decides to fire you. And so great advice to any creator is to establish direct links with your audience and to own the audience. And then quite frankly, not only do you have greater upside, but you have greater downside. And so it's dispersion. The other thing it represents, and this is the scary part, is that Maureen Dowd and Shira Ovadai and Andrew Ross Sorkin are probably realistically underpaid. And there's a lot of people at that platform that are overpaid. And what happens in digitization when capital, which is totally agnostic and doesn't care about equity or fairness, all crowds to the best in the tier two, quite frankly, get just swept off the planet. So Substack, there will be on Substack, the top 50 people on Substack will soak up 110% of the economics. And the other 50,000.
Although they're accusing them of creating these sort of faux businesses for these people and then facilitating them by pushing them out. So it's not they're not really successful, or maybe they are, or nobody knows. And how do they make those choices? What they've done is they've dragged themselves into an editorial discussion when they were pretending to be a benign platform, right? Where anybody can succeed. Any land here, come here and you can grow.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying. I think the transparency is the issue, because I had an interview with him and he was like, anybody can win on this platform. And okay, but someone who gets $100,000 and a ton of promotion can win a little better, not just because they're good. But anyway, but go ahead.
That's no different than any other media platform.
Sure, but they pretend it's not. They
when
pretend
NBC
it's
has
not.
The upfronts, they want Will from Will and Grace, so they want Rachel and Ross and Rachel, because those programs have so far the most success. So they pimp them, they promote them, and then they pull away. And Third Rock from the Sun is like, we're funny too. You should give us more oxygen. Mm-hmm. So them promoting the folks that get early traction, I don't see how that's different than what...
No, they went out and got them before. So I just wish they would be just transparent about what they're doing. And I think that's, you know, then people could say, who are they giving money to? Why? And then everyone can argue or decide whether they want to be on the platform. It's like, I don't like the ones they're funding. Like, I just think they kind of pulled a fast one on a lot of their writers.
Let me ask you this. Should Vox publish our agreement, our financial terms?
No, but it's because it acts like a media company. It says it's a media company, right? It's not necessarily the financial terms. I agree with you on that issue, but this was pretending it was not doing this, and it was doing this. That's all my issue is it's confusing, I think, to a lot of people. And so they immediately run to, you know, well, if you said you weren't a media company and you're acting like a media company, just tell me what you're doing. And I don't know if they need to do the economics.
No, it's like, who are they? We're not a media company. We're a platform.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're like, just say who you're paying and what you're doing, what they're getting at that I'm not getting. I don't know. I just feel like people thought this was a different thing. That's what I think is one of the big issues behind it. I'm still thinking it out, but I do think behind it is, are there going to be newsletter companies that are going to be left wing and right wing too? Like that Jason Calacanis has brought that up, but other people have brought it up. Is I don't know necessarily think. I just feel like people have to like plumb these things a little closer than they do. Like it's not quite what like the way Facebook and Facebook's a whole nother thing, which is that they're going to somehow get the benefit here. They have their own like agenda too.
Yeah, I have almost no comment. Do you know Jane Lynch tweeted at me this weekend?
Yes, I know.
She said, I'm a force, Kara.
You are.
I'm a force.
Okay, we're moving to that. Anyway, you do have a comment. Who is going to win here? I want you to, you do have a
same
thought.
People like, always win.
You have Facebook and Twitter and Substack. Which one of the three, if you had a bet on a horse here?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that big tech wins.
Okay.
They get the gold, the silver, and the bronze medal over the short, medium, and long term here. Over the short term, they'll pretend to give a fuck and like they're helping small business and journalists. Uh-huh. And slowly but surely, they'll starch all the margin. And then they'll invite the journalists to their party on the beach and they'll stroke their hair and tell them what great partners they are and then shoot them in the fucking face.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Okay. What about Twitter? Is Twitter going to shoot them in the face?
No, I'm a shareholder of Twitter. They're much nicer.
Okay.
Twitter still has tons of upside because it just commands such incredible influence. But
and your interest graph is there.
That's right. There, I mean, I think you and I are both like physically addicted, or at least I am, to Twitter.
Yes. And yes, you definitely are.
And they haven't. And
I
they
like
haven't
it. It's a good product.
Yeah, I think so too. And they just haven't monetized it as well as the other guys. It's just not, the bottom line is Twitter's just not as well run a company as Facebook or Google.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could see, could you see, this is my last question, a Clubhouse buying a Substack? Like, so that's, you know, you have your Clubhouse thing and then you put out a newsletter and people, you know, I don't know, they seem to belong together.
For me, Clubhouse is like CompuServe, Von Dutch hats, and White Claw. And that is, I will be excited to say in 5 years, those were things I never tried. Those are things I never tried, and they went out of business.
You tried White Claw. Don't even lie to the group
I
here.
I do like the claw. You called
you like
me out, and you're right. You ain't wrong. I do like the claw.
Yeah.
And then I watch Ted and I feel so Caucasian. I watch Ted videos and I'm like, could I be any whiter?
Ted, that is a really dirty movie. And then I listened to the podcast with
Bruce Springsteen and Barack Obama, and I'm like, oh my God, Caucasian Olympics.
Oh, okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. This is an interesting area. I think beyond the screaming right now that's going on, and I think some of it's quite justified, is this is an interesting...
What do you think of Clubhouse? I've never been on it. I don't understand
it. I think I'm going to interview the CEO soon. I don't know. I like the idea of it. I just don't understand why I would also...
You still like the people on it?
Do that. I think it'll be a fad. I do, honestly. There was a great thread that I tweeted. I think you probably saw. This guy was amazing. And I'm totally
blank. Attention. Somebody said this is amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing about where it was going. And I thought it felt like exactly the story. It felt like that's the story's gonna be written in. But I don't know. You never know. You never know what these things
are. But brands are brands that have communities. A lot of it is the self-expressive benefit. And you decide whether you want to be part of that community. And there's just certain, it's like walking into a club and thinking, it's not about the club. It's not about the music. It's about, do I aspire to be part of this herd, this tribe, whatever. And I just, some of the early ugliness around Clubhouse, I'm like, I just would never want to go to that club. I just never want to be there. But to their credit, they are talking about pivoting to a subscription model, which I think is the right move. And also, I gotta be honest, I hear about it everywhere.
But that's all right. You heard a lot. There's a lot of stuff. I want to see the next chapter. I think that's why that whole tweet stream. And I wish I could name this guy. Unfortunately, I can't find it. It's gone. It's gone away in my Twitter stream. It was. You can go look on my Twitter stream. There's a thing. I think there's a lot of people liked it because it was like, oh yeah, that's how it could go, kind of thing. That's how this could go. But I still like the phenomena. I like the phenomena. I like people chit chatting.
You know, some of it's exciting. Think about. I mean, just let's dream for a moment. Let's dream that Brad Pitt is a gay vampire. Let's dream about that. Okay. And then let's dream about what happens when they announce they're breaking these guys up. Think about the flurry of activity, of funding, of new businesses, of excitement. I just think the ecosystem, it would literally be like the ecosystem had a massive rain of nutrients and new oxygen and new sunlight. I think it would be so exciting what would happen. And by the way, a lot of people will say, well, but I love Amazon. You're still going to get all your shit in 24 minutes. It's not like Amazon would die. The majority of breakups, almost all breakups, result in greater service to the end consumer. You want to talk about when we go to five times a week. When these companies, they decide these companies are being broken up, and we think about all the possibilities for new companies, new competitors, and new companies being funded, you would see venture capitalists raise entirely new funds focused on the new niches and ecosystems that would open up when when these guys get broken up by Tim Wu and Lina Khan,
fair. So we're gonna have a whole flowering. It's a flowering. 1,000 flowers are gonna bloom. And then they're going to be cut down by another big tech company. Anyway, let's go on a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Netflix's carbon footprint and take a listener mail question.
Support for Pivot comes from the Optimistic Outlook podcast. What can a microgrid on Chicago's South Side teach us about the future of energy? How can we fight to make clean air a basic human right? And why are there almost a million open manufacturing jobs right now? There's only a few people in the world with the expertise, access, and perspective to give real answers to those questions. And Barbara Humpton, the CEO of Siemens USA, is one of them. On her podcast, The Optimistic Outlook, you get a seat at the table with Barbara as she shares the latest insights on breakthroughs in manufacturing technologies that are reshaping our reality. Barbara's guests include thought leaders, industry mavericks, and researchers who all share actionable information and ideas about the technologies that are creating our future. Recent episodes highlight how new technology paired with sustainability efforts has radically changed workplaces across the spectrum, from hospitals and energy plants to transportation systems. Other fascinating topics include sustainable beer brewing, the power of 3D printing, and the incredible potential of self-healing concrete. To learn more, join the dozens and dozens of people who tune into this podcast. Listen to The Optimistic Outlook wherever you consume your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Scott, we're back. Netflix has released information about how much binging is affecting the planet. Using the tool called DIMPAC, Netflix claims that 1 hour of streaming on its platform in 2020 used less than 100 grams of carbon dioxide equivalent. This amounts to driving less than an average car a quarter of a mile. The metric is a big step for Netflix to catch up on minimizing carbon footprint. Last year, Microsoft promised to go carbon negative by 2030. Apple announced its own plans to become carbon neutral by the same date. Facebook is committed to net zero emissions from all suppliers and users. And Google has promised to run exclusively on renewable energy. It's really interesting because there's lots and lots. And of course, there's a controversy about NFTs using and cryptocurrency using too much emissions. This is really interesting. I find it really interesting because this is why. Because as I predicted, the world's first trillionaire will be a climate change technologist, even though I made that up. The fact of the matter is there's all this opportunity here in all these promises of people to start moving into the space in a really innovative way. So what do you think about this? I think people do want to know what their impact is necessarily. I think especially young people. What do you think?
I think it's powerful. I think what gets measured gets done. And I tell young people to go get a really serious physical, because at the end of the day, what you want is baselines around measurement, because it's not having a high PSA or high cholesterol alone that's necessarily bad. It's the velocity and the change. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of having a set of standardized metrics around your carbon footprint such that companies, people, even countries can all commit to getting carbon neutral. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting. If we want to take climate change seriously, we have to have common standards and we have to have measurements. And then ideally it becomes a criteria for funding, taxation, consumer choice.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like it's like knowing what they put into their food and stuff like that. And I know people think it's virtue signaling, but I don't actually. I think it's an interesting thing to want to know about. Like someone was saying, I was using Instacart the other day, like, oh, you're using delivery and this and that. I'm like, you know, I've gotten into a car and driven it and parked in a parking lot with all these other cars. And this guy made 10 deliveries. Maybe we have to figure out how to pay these people better and give them more benefits. Absolutely, which is another issue. But I have a feeling it might be more efficient. Like, you know, I want to know. I don't know. I was like, I don't know. But I think it might be. And it's efficient use of my time, and because I can make more money doing other things and employing other people. Anyway, it's just an interesting, this carbon footprint thing, you know, Bill Gates has talked about it quite a bit in his book. I think these companies have been making these promises. They're going to keep these promises. And to keep these promises, all kinds of innovation has to happen, and products and ways to mitigate it. Because like the NFT people have moved in really quickly and said, okay, we're going to move to this other, there's something called proof of work versus proof of something else. I can't, POS. They're going to move to a more efficient system, like because the artists were upset. And, you know, it's, And someone was like, oh, it's virtue signal. And I was like, no, it's not. It's actually people wanting to know the provenance of what they do and the impact that they have. And more, my kids talk about it a lot. And I didn't particularly push the environmental stuff on them necessarily. I didn't at all. I should more so. But it'll be interesting to see who dominates in this area.
There's an enormous business opportunity for being the brand. I built a business around this notion. Eltsy was essentially, we're going to try and establish ourselves as the premier neutral, most rigorous arbiter of digital IQ or digital competence across corporations. Mm-hmm. Whoever figures out a way, and it might be a government agency, it might be a for-profit company that figures out a way to come up with a ranking similar to the Net Promoter Score or to the Y&R Brand Asset Evaluator that publishes, or the Business Week ranking. Rankings are really powerful. And a third party that comes in and says, these are the criteria for measuring your carbon footprint, and then applies it to the 1,000 biggest corporations in the world. That's a big business. A media company should probably do it. But again, I think it's really powerful and exciting. And it's exciting that this next generation is a lot more cognizant than my generation around climate change and holding and reverse engineering. I just never would have thought to connect the dots between Netflix and climate change.
Yeah, 100%. It was interesting what they're going to do with this information, because I think one of the things is we don't use that much, everybody, just so you know. And actually, they could use it as a brand initiative. Like, well, you go to the movies and you use this and this and this and this. And here we are. So it's almost like, putting sugar information on something. Like, I do pay attention to that now when I didn't before. And it just, I think it's a brand additive, like that you may want to make your choices of how you move around the world, et cetera. I think more people will do that. Not everybody, for sure. People are going to continue to use plastic and like crap all over this planet. But I think a lot of more people are not.
It's a static part of our zeitgeist now. There's a huge conversation around crypto and the carbon footprint of mining. I think it's exciting.
It'd be something if that group really fixes that issue. And I think they certainly can. There's all kinds of discussions about how to do that. But I do like that a brand like Netflix is doing this. You do hear when Microsoft made it, I noticed this a lot more than I did when Microsoft did it. But all corporations are going to have some sort of score in this area or make people aware of it. And then it has to be accurate too, not just using it fakely, like like those oil commercials that they always show forests and stuff.
That drives me crazy. My favorite ad campaign ever, Brace for BP, petroleum, now it's Beyond Petroleum.
Yeah.
Yes, we're moving beyond petroleum, although 99.9% of our profits and our CapEx is around digging new wells in the North Atlantic or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's a great, interesting story. Pay attention, people. Pay attention. And we think this is important. I do. I think it is. And absolutely. Anyway, moving on, let's take a listener mail question.
You've got. I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Hi, Kara. Hi, Scott. This is an anonymous question from London. Scott's spoken about Goldman a few times, so I wanted to ask about a company that's often mentioned in tandem, McKinsey. Both are known for their outsized influence as sources of exceptional talent and for their public scandals. But what do you think? Does McKinsey still offer unrivaled services, and is it still a training ground for the next generation of CEOs? Or is it riding out a diminishing brand and weakening proposition? And if you were to advise the newly elected managing director, Bob Sternfels, what would you say?
So, Scott, where are the next generation of leaders going to come from as to this question?
Well, I think McKinsey and Goldman have what is one of the key attributes of any successful or really successful organization, and that is they've developed a reputation for being an accelerant in young people's careers.
Accelerant.
Well, if you're a talented young woman who has a double E from Dartmouth, or you just have all the right skills and grew up playing sports, or you were the editor of your paper and you just kind of have it going on. I mean, we all meet those people, right? I have several of them were in my company, and they're these women who could be the junior senator from Pennsylvania by the time they're 37. Mm-hmm. To attract those people, and I think that's the secret sauce in any high growth company. Is show me a sample of the half dozen people under the age of 30, and I'll tell you how the company's doing. And your ability to attract the best human capital is a function of your reputation as an accelerant. And what I mean by that is the good stuff that we always talk about is some 25-year-old gets double promoted, makes more money than their parents were making at 45, gets tremendous responsibility, this whole notion of meritocracy. What these companies are really good at, and no one wants to talk about, is the only way you can do that is by moving people out. And that is some 45-year-old who's making $500,000 or $1 million a year because they're 45 and they've been around a long time, but who's no longer pulling their weight gets moved out. And what McKinsey is famous for is firing people really elegantly. Mm-hmm. And that is they say, okay, you're great. You're not going to make partner, but we're going to find you a job. And they've created this unbelievable alumni network, and they continue to attract the best and brightest human capital. I think this is a scandal, is somewhat overrated. I would argue that McKinsey needs a better operating group. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Goldman's biggest threat to their brand, and I know the guys at Goldman well, and I like them a lot.
Right.
If they take Robinhood public and they advise Robinhood, there will be a scandal around Goldman and Robinhood, because Robinhood is a mendacious group of fucks. And if Goldman continues to associate with mendacious fucks, they will they will damage their brand. And when McKinsey advises...
By the way, Mendacious Fox is the name of my band in high school, but go
MF. But when McKinsey decides to advise Gaddafi, I mean, they're just going to get in trouble. So I don't even think it's...
Or opiates or whatever. Yeah, whatever various and sundry things consulting companies do.
Yeah, when they just say, okay, we're whores with Hermes ties and graduate degrees. Okay, but you're still cavorting with dangerous organizations that are going to lead to bad places. Whereas the same thing is true of Goldman. Goldman's operating committee that okayed them to take Robinhood public is putting the brand at risk. And my sense is that McKinsey, it's not that they're bad people. They're generally a very impressive group of people. It's that they're senior management that clears and okays certain engagements and certain clients has been making trading off long-term brand equity and, quite frankly, health for the world by taking on, by talking themselves into believing, well, we can make the world a better place if we advise these people that are not good people and not good organizations and are corrupt governments. So, but the bottom line is, the long-winded way of saying, McKinsey will continue to attract the best and brightest because they continue to be outstanding at taking young human capital, training it well, and accelerating it. It's an outstanding organization. Even through this scandal, it's going to be fine.
So what is going to, I think it's an interesting question of what each of them does and what it helps. Talk a little bit though about how it helps a young person. So my nephew, I forget which one he went to one of them, McKinsey or BCG. He was working somewhere, didn't like it. I advised him to go to one of these companies, and then he he's liked it. He's liked the ability. He has an engineering degree, a chemical engineering degree, and I think it's interesting. I think it's an interesting way to sort of improve yourself for a short time where you're going somewhere else.
That's exactly right. I started my first
company. Better than a graduate school. Rather than you get paid for going to graduate school.
Exactly right. My first company out of business school is Profit Brand Strategy, a consulting firm. And consulting is essentially a second graduate degree. It's outstanding in the sense that I'll break down the upsides and the downsides. The upside is it's a fantastic way to get into amazing shape from a multidimensional perspective. You have to be good at presenting. You have to be good at analytics. You have to have good EQ. You have to be able to sell business. You have to be analytical. It's a fantastic place for what I'll call not only athletes, but aimless athletes. Because the reason you go to business school is because you're credentialed and smart and ambitious and have absolutely no fucking idea what you want to do with your life. And you're like, while I'm figuring it out, I'll get a credential that'll make me worth $150,000 instead of a confused person making $70,000.
Right.
The same is true of consulting. Very few people end up lifelong in consulting because you know what? It's a young woman's job because you're on planes and you're kissing other people's ass. And when the CMO of Audi calls you and says, hey, we have a meeting tomorrow. Can you be here? I say yes when I'm running a consulting firm and I fly to fucking Ingolstadt. Yeah. It's really difficult on relationships. Really difficult on relationships, hard to attach to a spouse or kids or friends when you're roaming the earth as a consultant. You get paid. I mean, this is going to sound strange, but basically the way I built Profit into a brand strategy firm was by establishing a series of like father-son relationships with powerful men such that they would hire my firm for $500,000 or $1 million engagements. I was good at what I did, but it's a very relationship-driven business, which quite frankly is exhausting. It's exhausting playing golf and being nice to people.
I got worse as I got older,
but it's a fantastic way to get exposed to pontoon into different industries, develop fantastic schools, get another credential. You just don't, if you go to McKinsey or Bain or BCG for 3 years, you don't look back and think, well, I really fucked up doing that for 2 or 3 years. It's like,
huge entrepreneurial bent that you really want to make something, right?
But so, it just means you can raise more money. It's like having a second or a third MBA. It's a fantastic thing for a young person.
Yeah, it is interesting. What's interesting at McKinsey, you know, just last month, the partners voted out the consulting firm's top executive, Kevin, I think it's Snyder, on the blowback over the opiate crisis. So 600 senior partners.
He got voted out because of his name. Doesn't he sound like a menace? Kevin Snyder.
Well, just so you know, McKinsey agreed to pay 49 states a historic settlement of almost $600 million because of sales advice the company gave to drug makers. So it's really, you do have to protect, you're right, you do have to protect them just like anything else. Last question, is schools stopping luxury brands, as you've discussed, and endlessly, how will young people differentiate themselves in the job market? Is this the kind of way you do it? Or what's the, you know, that it's not, you know, you don't get the job because you're Harvard, Princeton, Yale, whatever.
We love the shorthand of brands. We used to, Europeans were famous for doing it based on your last name. Uh-huh. Americans did it based on where you did go to college. Mm-hmm. Instinctively, we do it based on the height of your cheekbones or the length of your legs or the size of your biceps. And if that mm-hmm. sounds sexist, it is, but we're sexist as a species. So we love the shorthand. And in America, the brands or credentials are incredibly powerful. And we will always, whether it's schools becoming less important in terms of credentialing, I actually think they're becoming more important. The applications to the top 50 schools have skyrocketed this year. Mm-hmm. But we will always fill that void or that need for shorthand with brands and certification. And it'll be, someone will step into that void and say, okay, I'll provide you with the certification or the screening. McKinsey is a fantastic certification. Being a varsity athlete is a fantastic certification. Having been a journalist at the New York Times is an incredible certification. Yes. So that's not going anywhere. It may shift, but I actually think that the elite university branding is only getting stronger. I predicted that they would massively increase their enrollments partnering with big tech. I was wrong. They decided to double down on exclusivity.
Yeah, I just heard from someone telling me like, oh, our numbers were up more than ever. And that means we're not going to let as many people in. I was like, is that a good thing? I've become Scott. I was like, that's wrong. What business says that? We decided to deny 98% of the people ice cream. What?
Oh my God.
What?
This is, and guess what?
That's you what know I what said. That means? I went like that. I went, what?
It means your daughter's not getting in. Brag about it.
No, my daughter will get into everything.
There you go.
We just got into a preschool that was very competitive.
Well, how white of you, Kara?
No, it was a lesbian.
What preschool is going to turn you down? You might
it
as well.
It was a lesbian. Thing.
The only way you could be better is if you showed up in a wheelchair. Seriously.
Stop.
That's a horrible thing to say, but it's an episode of Modern Family, which means it's okay.
Yes, that's true. It means it's okay. It was an episode. Let me just say, we do get this.
What a shocker they got into. I'm sure they're not scared of you. Yeah, a strong lesbian woman who happens to work at the New York Times. Yeah, let's piss her off.
No, I'm just saying. Anyway, schools should be letting lots more people. And that's my, I'm not talking about nursery schools. I'm talking about big colleges. I've moved to the Scott way.
Look at the data. When I applied to UCLA, the admittance rate was 60%. And I didn't
get
in.
That's a good rate.
I didn't get in. I had to apply again.
That's a good rate. That's a fair rate.
You know what it's going to be this year?
What?
It's going to be 9%.
Oh, God.
It's going to be 9%.
That's ridiculous. It should be 50. I say 50-50. Don't you think 50-50?
Yeah. No one has a birthright to get into a good school. But here's the bottom line. I wouldn't be here with you making jokes about Brad Pitt and my prostate and getting paid for it if we had decided that schools were the new enforcers of the caste system. And there's so many things that need to change here. When people, I think I would like to see people when they make donations to schools say, I need you to expand the number of seats. We need to fall back in love with the unremarkable, Kara.
Unremarkable. There's like so Scott many. Galloway.
Well, 99% of us are not in the top 1%. The test of a society.
According to Quitter, you're not unremarkable at this point, apparently.
Jane Lynch likes me.
Chandler. I know she does. Okay. All right, Scott.
I'm a force.
One more quick break. We'll be back. I need to be remarkable about predictions. We'll be back in a
America,
second.
Well, hold on. America is not about turning the 1% into billionaires. America is about taking the bottom 90% and putting them into the top 10%. We're being less and less American because of universities.
Less and less American. All right, Scott. One more quick break. We'll be back for predictions.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
Okay, Scott, prediction time. Give me a prediction. You're very good. Amazon one was good. What's your next one? What's your next prediction?
We're finally going to demonstrate some leadership. I love what I think are sort of underreported business stories that are going to have second order effects. So Walmart has announced that they are going to have a kind of a digital wallet around access to your healthcare records.
Yes.
But what's really important in that announcement is they said they're going to basically create a vaccine passport. that says on your phone, you'll be able to pull up confirmation you've been vaccinated. And we're going to decide to demonstrate some leadership here and say, okay, you need to prove before you get on a plane and have access to our transportation infrastructure, you need to prove that you do not have a gun on your person.
Yeah.
When you go to certain countries
we
of return.
We do. We get mad about things and not about other things, but go ahead.
And we are going to show some leadership here and decide companies, and I think ultimately the government, we're about to run, the problem so far has been we haven't had enough vaccine. We're about to run into a new problem. We're going to run out of arms.
Yeah.
And that is 24%
of people. Or inefficient systems to get to the arms, but go ahead.
But that's getting better.
Yeah.
So I think in the next few weeks, we're literally going to pivot to a demand side problem instead of a supply side problem. And and 24% of Americans say they're either not going to get it or won't get it unless their company demands it. And they tend to cluster around three groups. Young people who feel immune, people of color who have quite frankly been, for legitimate reasons, don't trust vaccines. And then third, deeply conservative Republicans, specifically evangelicals. We're making a lot of progress around groups one and two. And I think we're going to show some leadership here. And I think we're going to say, listen, you are as an asymptomatic carrier of this virus.
Dangerous.
Really dangerous.
Yeah.
And if you want to access the trillions of dollars and the freedoms, we have decided in this country, we conflated liberty with selfishness.
Yeah.
Oh, I've decided it's my right. I'm going to exercise my liberty by being incredibly selfish. Our community and sacrifice is what makes America great.
Vaccine passport. I have no problem with it. I agree with you. I think it's really irresponsible. I think it's interesting. Trump came out, he was on whatever, what's her name's show. I don't know if it's their name's thing. She's a terrible journalist. But he said, all my people should take it. Like all the Trumps ran and got it after all their nonsense over the past 6 months on this issue. They all ran as fast as possible to get it. And all of their people did. There's a really good story about how they all just like rushed the door to get the vaccine.
It's a huge opportunity for him.
But he did say it. I have to say, he did say it, but it's like the fact that we had to beg him to do it was kind of ridiculous on some level. He should have been saying it loud and clear for a long time.
But he's the most important person around this right now.
Yeah,
if he were to be really loud about it, it's really, I mean,
it's a good brand thing for him.
Oh gosh, it could have enormously positive impact, which would repair about 3% of the damage he's done. But if he's thinking about his legacy, the absolute gangster move for him, I agree with you. But
you know what? Because the thing he talked about was how it was his vaccine. I got the vaccine. I was like, he invented it. I was like, I think it's this couple in Germany who invented it, this idea. He literally took all the credit as usual, but whatever.
And Dr. Swisher will weigh in on this.
Yes, he will.
There really is. I'm literally scared right now. There is a race.
Yeah.
There is a race between the viruses are so impressive. Every time someone gets this thing, the virus learns. And the virus has got a heads up that the vaccines are here. And you know it is working overtime. The other thing I can't
see what's happening in Europe and the delays and everything.
But this
Italy closed down again? One of them.
But this whole I'm going to wait or I'm not going to take it, I call that the narcissist playbook.
That's bullshit, people.
Yeah.
We don't like it. We're not going to let you come on this way unless you have a vaccine passport.
The call has gone out. 2 million Americans could still die from this thing. The call has gone out to get 2 million American brothers and sisters off the beach. Get them off the beach. Get a vaccine. It's not about fucking you. Get a vaccine.
Yeah.
Anyways, right, I think we're going to have vaccine passports. And I think slowly but surely corporations and states and governments are going to say, look.
You can't come back to work unless.
You want to work at Salesforce or you want to work at Lemonade?
No, you want to work. You can't come into work.
Or whatever it might be. Yeah. You can't come into an office. You can't get on a plane, an FAA sanctioned plane. I think they should. Yeah. I think there's a decent chance they will.
We'll see.
Anyway,
we'll see. That's a really good one. I like that one. That was interesting.
Send your kid to a public school? We force him to get vaccinated now. Why wouldn't we force him?
To improve from gay vampire making out handsome vampire?
Very hard to do that. Very hard to do that.
That's a nice pivot, as they say.
Very hard to do that.
All right, Scott, that's a really good prediction. And that's the show.
Do you have any predictions?
I don't predict things. I don't, you do. This is why I live in the glory, in the reflective glory.
Oh, yeah. Bask in the light.
I'll make a little prediction. I think the stock market's really going to go crazy.
Going to go up.
Up, like crazy and up.
Because of the stimulus?
Just everything. It feels like savings. Everyone's like, let's open the checkbooks, the ones that have money.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see enormous stock market, everything. It's going to be roaring 20s happening.
Yeah. Roaring 20s. I think you're right.
All right. I don't think it's not the most smart, but it's the obvious one. Anyway, that's the show. We'll be back on Tuesday. Go to nymag.com/pivot to submit your question for the podcast. The link is also in our show notes. Scott, read us out.
Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis and Camila Salazar. Ernie Intratot engineered this episode. Thanks also to Hannah Rosen and Drew Burrows. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, check us out on Spotify. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Pivot. From New York Magazine and Vox Media, we'll be back next week for a breakdown of all things tech and business. Jane Lynch thinks I'm a force. I'm a force.
I'm having her text you. How about that?
Thanks.